What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Ben on a very overcast Thursday afternoon here in the studio for another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. What's going on, Matt?
I'm really excited for today's episode, guys.
Yeah, we just spent like 45 minutes going over the docket.
We basically just had an episode. I don't know. Okay, but anyway, it's going to be great.
Yeah, before we jump into everything, we're going to shout out our sponsor first, Unchained Capital. You freaks know all about them. They recently released their 2 of 3 multi-sig vaults, growing on their product suite, which started with a collateralized loan product. We had Parker Lewis on a couple weeks ago on the podcast, so if you haven't checked that out, go check it out. And then go check out Unchained's Vault at www.unchained-capital.com/vaults. That's www.unchained-capital.com/vaults. Don't forget that dash, freaks. And we'll put a special ref link in the notes as well. Before we jump into the topics, the Bitcoin price, according to the TradeBlock XBX index, is $5,277.66. I believe a little bit higher than where we were last week.
It's basically moon.
Moon. What block are we at?
We're at 572.197. It's a lot of blocks.
We 630,000. How many blocks away from that are we? About 89,000? 88 something?
What is it? What's the block height again? 630,000.
Wow, way off. Way
like
off 58, on that.
Yeah,
58K. I was just way off on that math.
58,000 blocks.
Yeah, 58,000. I was off by.
To halving.
Yeah. I added 40,000 there by accident. That's what happens when you try to do mental math.
We're great at math here at the Rabbit Hole Recap.
Yeah, speaking of math, got a lot to talk about. First topic of the week has to do with cryptography. Satoshi's Trezor was dropped this week.
Not his treasure, his treasure.
His treasure.
No, but it kind of sounds like he dropped his treasure, his like hardware wallet, and
yeah,
he lost
Satoshi
it.
Satoshi left before treasure ever became a thing, I believe. But treasure, like a pirate treasure, there's an international treasure hunt for $1 million worth of Bitcoin. Have we confirmed the Bitcoin amount? Is it around 200 Bitcoin?
I think it's going to be around 20 billion Satoshis.
20 billion Satoshis.
Which is 200 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But the address hasn't been shown yet. That address is going to be one of the clues. Like the way they disclose the address is an upcoming clue.
Yeah, so for you freaks who have not heard yet, there's, again, an international treasure hunt for around 200 Bitcoin.
It's Ready Player One.
Yeah, it's basically Ready Player One in real life here
with Bitcoin
in 2019 with Bitcoin. So the deal is there are 400 shards of a private key
split into 1,000, but you only need 400.
Yeah, okay. So there's 1,000 shards. Are you sure?
I'm 99% sure.
Okay. Yeah. So well, 1,000 shards. You need 400 to put together a private key, which gives you access to this Bitcoin.
And then you don't need any permission or anything. Then from that point, you just send it. Whoever gets it, gets it.
Gets it. Yeah.
So there's like all these crazy game theory things that go on at the end there when you get close to 400.
So yeah. So let's jump in. Let's jump into that. So it's crazy. So three keys. There's only been three disclosed right now. Three shards.
I think so. Yeah. Unless we're behind the game.
Yeah. Let's air high five. We have all three shards.
There you go. Bang bang.
So yeah, it was released earlier this week. Eric Meltzer, and I believe he's behind this.
Unknown. Yeah.
And yeah, it's really cool. So the first three shards were found, and somebody was able to read the HTML CSS file via checking the index.
John Cantrell, yeah.
Yeah, John Cantrell of the website, and was able to sort of brute force the third key.
Yeah, he brute forced the second two keys.
Yeah,
because it was local. All the code was local.
But
they were just short words.
But yeah, and this was sort of intentional, it seems, right?
Eric Meltzer was on the Citizen Bitcoin podcast, and at least he pitched it as it was part of the. Not all the clues are going to be set up this way, where you go to the website and you enter a password. And part of the whole thing was he was wondering if people were going to
figure that out.
Force it. Yeah, yeah. Figure it out.
And so they're trying to discern the mental acuity of the treasure hunters and make the game harder as it goes on, depending on that, on how good the treasure hunters are.
So the crazy thing here is, he kind of, it seems like he envisions it as a reoccurring type thing. Like he wants, like this is, it seems like this hunt will, they expect it to take like, they refuse to say, but it seems from context that they expect it to take like a year, maybe 2 years max. And then they'll have another one and another one and another one. And they'll at the same time, they'll have all these little hunts that will be for smaller prizes. So it's not like everyone, you know, has to go for the big prize.
Yeah, and there's like crazy secondary markets that can be built on top of this game as well.
Yeah, like, they're going to have like an app, and they're going to allow you to sell keys between people and stuff like that.
And they'll have a leaderboard. It's very, very Ready Player One-esque, where there's going to be a leaderboard of teams. We have a team out there, the DPR Avengers, and we plan on giving, if we find
when
the treasure.
When we get the treasure, we're going to give 10% to Free Ross.
To Free Ross, yes. Yeah. So we are accepting applications for team members. We're looking for wizards, people that are smarter at cryptography than us, and are geographically dispersed as well. It's important to have people in different parts of the world for this treasure hunt.
This is so ridiculous that this is like a thing.
Right?
This was, yeah, awesome. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so it was cool. So they had people walking around in different parts of the country or hid different QR codes in different parts of the country.
They
for
were
the
looking
first key.
In different parts of the world.
In the world,
right?
Yes, yeah. So there was one here in New York in Times Square. There was one in Boston by MIT. One in San Francisco, I believe.
So those were like all the same key, right?
Yes.
And then they had another batch of keys that was in Asia. And then I think they had a batch that was in South America.
Is this how Bitcoin goes viral? Can you see this catching on, like in the mainstream?
I think so, right? Like you don't have to be a Bitcoiner to be excited about finding, you know, $1 million worth of cash.
Right.
And like you can't do this. You can never do this with any, you couldn't do it with fiat. If they want to do it with fiat, it'd be ridiculous. Imagine trying to coordinate like all the payment providers in all the different countries and stuff. Be ridiculous.
Yeah, Bitcoin, we've always talked about Bitcoin and AR, like sort of geocaching and dropping QR codes like in parts of the world and doing like a physical treasure hunt like that, which will probably come in the future, but you don't even need the AR aspect of it. It can be completely cerebral and a puzzle, math-based. And
I mean, some of the clues might be AR-based.
We don't even know.
Right?
Maybe they are.
Like they do have an app in the works. So there's a bunch of different possibilities here. It should be interesting to watch it play out.
Now, and if you're a Bitcoiner, has ever seen Ready Player One while you were watching that movie, if you were watching that and didn't think Bitcoin enables this, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like ridiculous that Bitcoin wasn't included in the book to begin with.
Was it written after Bitcoin was created?
I think so, right? Isn't it like a relatively recent book?
I'm not positive.
I'm pretty sure it's a relatively recent book. All I know is I like reading a lot of new sci-fi, and Bitcoin has kind of ruined a lot of it for me, because if they don't incorporate Bitcoin into it, it's just like it's unrealistic.
Do you watch Mr. Robot?
Yeah, and just, you know, Bitcoin's incorporated, so it makes more sense to me.
Yeah, I've never watched Mr. Robot, but told I should.
It was like I was thinking you should definitely watch Mr. Robot, and especially as like a Bitcoiner, it's like a really good. You can like pretend it's like fake studying, you know, what it possibly could go down. I was thinking like with like our WikiLeaks conversation last week and Julian Assange. That was one of the light bulbs for me with WikiLeaks, how powerful it was that you would watch like action movies and drama movies, and half the movie would be like irrelevant because the plot would be, you know, they find something that they have to tell the world and they're trying to tell the world, but all the bad guys are stopping them. All they had to do was just drop it to WikiLeaks and it just completely destroyed the plot.
The Bourne series completely destroyed.
Yeah. Why didn't you just upload it to WikiLeaks?
Yeah, there not much new news on that front, right? I think he's still in the process of being extradited, still in London.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so Toshi Treasure, DPR Avengers, we're looking for teammates. We'll put the link in the show notes. If you can help us out, we're going to go hunting.
I mean, I think, yeah, everyone should be going hunting for this thing. This should be fun. And if there's a lot of traction and a lot of activity with it, then, you know, there'll be a lot more of them, I imagine.
Yeah, and the another thing to think of, the prize is $1 million right now, but depending on where the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, it'll be locked in Bitcoin amount once, at least we'll know for sure once we see the address.
Yeah, when I think we should lock that down sooner rather than later.
What, the amount?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure it's pre-funded. It's already funded, but I haven't seen anything for myself, so.
Imagine the fervor around this hunt if it's like 3 years
from now.
It's
like the middle of a bull market. I was thinking like just if things got a little bit crazy in December and that's when it kind of happens, that could be that'd be pretty crazy. Just like if we were in like a similar bullish kind of situation as 2017, while this prize was, while people had like 300 keys or like 350 keys.
I can see a whole cottage industry being birthed out of this game. That's all I'm going to say. Next topic.
One more thing. They ask for, if you go to the website, I think it's satoshitreasure.xyz,
yes.
They can send you notifications like of new clues and stuff. And there's an email and a phone option. That phone option is optional. You don't have to fill that in.
You do not. You do not.
If you don't want to give Meltzer and crew
your phone number.
Yeah.
Or if you have a burner that you want to use for the treasure.
Yeah, you know, you can use a burner email.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely duly noted that phone is optional. It was not clear, but
I think they put optional on it, okay. But still it's worth mentioning.
So the price pump earlier in the month, April 1st and 2nd, people ran with that story. The hours and days after that 20% jump overnight from April 1st to 2nd. This week, TradeBlock and CoinMetrics have come out and sort of disputed the popular narratives that were going around and basically proved that Bitfinex was the one who led the charge.
Yeah, and I guess CoinMetrics also said, like, hit BTC.
Yeah, and hit BTC. So there was... I believe right after the pump, people were saying it was three exchanges, Coinbase, Bitstamp, and Kraken.
Kraken, yeah.
Kraken, maybe. And it turns out
I think so.
It wasn't, so.
Well, that we talked about on the pod, I think, like the Reuters article, or that's what we were talking about, how to pronounce it, Reuters.
Reuters,
the
yeah.
Reuters article, you know, was based on some random dude in fucking England who was like, one guy did it. So there you go. And no one really knows anyway. You're just looking at the volume numbers on the charts.
Yeah, no one knows. I mean, I guess the main crux is Bitcoins were actually bought, like the price.
Oh, yeah, a lot of Bitcoins are bought. Yeah. A lot of Bitcoins are sold. And right now, a lot of Bitcoins are being bought and a lot of Bitcoins are being sold.
Yeah.
It's like people get into this thing in their head where, oh, like we're in a bear market. Everyone is selling. No, like literally there's another person buying on the opposite side. It's a weird mental block thing to get around.
Yeah, if somebody's buying, somebody's got to be selling on the other end.
Otherwise, we'd be at zero.
But it's like, how is that not obvious right after the fact? Like, how did it take us like a few weeks of jumping into it? Like, how is it like not obvious on TradeBlock? Like, hey, I mean, I think it probably was obvious. I guess this is more of a question into how could the news get so
because all Reuters has to do is just publish an article with a one-line quote from some dude, you know, in London, and that's their amount of due diligence and work, and TradeBlock and CoinMetrics like sat down with the data and like made some reasonable conclusions based off of all the data they have, but they still, even both of them, like they never made it concrete. But, you know, Reuters just runs it on the headline, Bitcoin pumps because of a $100 million trader.
I saw Murad was coming at TradeBlock for their choice of chart
colors. They changed the color. Yeah, because their colors were like all blue, so it was hard to.
Yeah, it was a hard chart to discern.
It was a pretty funny tweet by Murad.
Ooh, this has been hot this week. I talked about it in the bent. You tweeted about it. 2019 seems to be the year of privacy in Bitcoin. This week, in particular, I'm going to say it. Pierre pushed, or I don't know if he pushed it yet, but he plans on the next major release of the node launcher to make it default to Tor. So anybody running Pierre's node launcher will have a sort of inherent privacy with their at the network level and the messaging level. And then on top of that, Trezor came out and said they're working on
Wasabi
and Trezor are working together, yeah. And well, Wasabi and a bunch of hardware wallets are working together to make it so that you can use Wasabi with your hardware wallet and make it easier to mix your UTXs.
Yeah, so my understanding is they used the same integration that Bitcoin Core recently put in.
Yeah, so they will put the GitHub page in the notes, and so far it's compatible, or the test they've run with two hardware wallets, the Trezor Model T and the Cold Card on Windows, OS X, and Linux have passed their test. They plan on testing Digital Bitbox, KeepKey, Ledger Nano S, and Trezor One and running those through the gauntlet soon. So it looks like Wasabi will be compatible with hardware wallets in the near future.
Yeah, so this is fucking huge news. It's a really, really big deal.
Explain the gravity of this to us.
So before, when you needed to use your hardware wallet and you wanted to use it, most people used the Trezor UI on the web browser and the Ledger UI on the Ledger Live app that runs on your computer. Or now, even with the new Ledger, they have the app on the phone because it's got the Bluetooth. Basically, when you did that, you were leaking all of your transaction data is going to Ledger or going to Trezor. You're going to their servers. So you're just telling them all of your addresses, all your balances, everything. You know, hopefully they're not storing that information and sharing it, but you have to trust them. So the alternative has been to run Electrum Personal Server with your full node and then connect through Electrum to your Electrum Personal Server and use, because Electrum supports hardware wallets. Because if you use regular Electrum, then you're connecting to a random server, and that random server could be logging all your shit. So this finally gives hardware wallet owners a turnkey, privacy-focused alternative to all that. Because Electrum Personal Server, by the way, that HODL guide has how to set up Electrum Personal Server if you want to do that. But it's a more complicated setup. With Wasabi, you just download it. You can use it on any of the platforms. It's got a nice GUI. Automatically connects through Tor for you. And then if you run a full node on your computer, it automatically pulls blocks from your full node. Or it can work in light node mode if you don't want to run your own full node. So it gives you like the most private way of interacting with the hardware wallet. And it's like super user friendly. It's right. Fucking crazy.
I love how Wasabi has made like UTXO selection so straightforward. And how has this not existed yet?
Yeah, the only ones who came close was like Electrum. Mm-hmm. But the labeling system in Wasabi is just...
It's incredible.
So much easier to use.
It's Adam, done a great job UX-wise. And UTXO selection is something huge and something that should be at the forefront of these wallets, in my opinion. So it's great to see now with hardware wallets, you'll be able to, one, use Wasabi, and then I guess just an added benefit is their natural UTXO selection.
So my understanding, I haven't tried it with a hardware wallet yet. My understanding is, I might be wrong here, but my understanding here is that you still have the traditional Wasabi hot wallet for your coin joins because they need to be constantly signing those transactions, including them in coin join transactions. And then you also can interact with your hardware wallet through it. So you can, you basically like still are like transferring in and out of Wasabi.
So it's like a new Trezor bridge, but via Wasabi or something like that almost.
Yeah. I mean, like you can interact with your hardware wallet in, through Wasabi, and you can interact with your CoinJoin wallet through Wasabi. And if you want to move funds between the two, then obviously you can do that at the same time.
Yeah.
It's pretty, pretty badass.
Pretty badass. And
it's a really big deal.
And I think Ragnar tweeted out today, like a lot of people were saying 2019 was going to be the year of Lightning, but it does look like it's shaping up to be the year of very good hardware and privacy improvements as Lightning infrastructure gets built out.
I think it's, I mean, it makes it ridiculously easy to use your hard. I think one of the reasons so few people run full nodes is because you can't easily just use your hardware wallet with a full node. And that changes now with this new Wasabi update, that changes. And that's really cool by itself. And let alone all the knock on effects that it's going to do with more people to using coin joins because they can use their hardware wallet right in the app.
Yeah, making it easier will certainly incentivizes. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot this week. I've been wanting to write something in the Bent, but just haven't felt comfortable. Like, does, and this is something I'm very interested to get your perspective on, like, do these improvements, is it inherently improving Bitcoin's privacy, or is it just better use? Like, Bitcoin's not inherently more private, it's just being used better. Or is the fact that a bunch of people are mixing UTXOs make it inherently more private. You get what I'm getting at there?
Like, Bitcoin hasn't changed.
Yes, exactly.
I think it makes using the Bitcoin network for everyone more private.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because when you start doing widespread coin joins, it just helps everyone.
Yeah.
But does it make Bitcoin any more private?
Could you say, that's just semantics. Is there like a threshold? Yeah, exactly. That's what I said, like a semantics argument I've been having in my head.
It's there. That argument is there, I think.
Yeah. Is there a threshold of mixed UTXOs that would make Bitcoin more private? I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, the big thing is like if you mix in these techniques that like Samurai's working on and stuff where it basically every transaction looks like a coin join, even if it's not a coin join, then you get some really interesting things when you have, you know, masses doing coin joins. And then the other thing is, when if they ever tried to do some kind of like blacklist on coin joins, it's way harder to enforce the more transactions that have gone through it. Right, like, what are they gonna like? If you start banning, because they can't just ban direct coin joins into exchanges. It would be like a couple hops. So then, how many hops? You know, and so if everyone's using CoinJoin and the vast majority of Bitcoin users are using CoinJoin on the regular, then any kind of blacklist on CoinJoin histories becomes basically the equivalent of like banning Bitcoin self-ownership in the first place, like self-custody in the first place.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying. Yeah. Is there, what is the threshold at which the exchanges and the on-ramps who would have the ability to block these transactions, when do they throw their arms up and say, hey, there's nothing we can do about it?
Well, I think either way, it's like probably unenforceable because someone will accept them, you know? So
yeah.
And it just becomes like unrealistic to have to check the full history of like any particular UTXO. Like that's ridiculous and onerous on the receiving party. So in a lot of ways, I think exchanges should welcome coins that have gone through CoinJoin because for them, you know, what they don't know can't hurt them. They, you know, they'd prefer to not know.
It's like a bodega owner getting a $5 bill.
Exactly. It reduces liability. I think part of the reason people even talk about taint and all this stuff is because the capability is there. That's what makes people think of it in the first place. Like if you didn't have that capability, then it'd be way less of a discussion.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch this play out, and hopefully this Wasabi hardware wallet integration will incite more coin joins and increase the anonymity set.
Yeah, like run your own node and then connect Wasabi to your own node. If it runs on your computer, you know, you can use Pierre's, you know, you want to really be a power user, you use Pierre's power node launcher, which is going to default to Tor. You run it on your computer. It automatically runs in prune mode, so if it needs to, so it won't take up too much space. I think what it's like takes up like less than 20 gigs. And then you install Wasabi, and Wasabi automatically connects to that Bitcoin node. And then if you run coin join transactions, not only do you help yourself, because if you got those coins through like a KYC type exchange, then you can de-link them from your identity, so you can help yourself going forward. But you help all Bitcoiners by improving the liquidity of coin joins. So join us.
Where are we? Join us. Where are we on the Wasabi anonymity set, or how many Bitcoins have been run through it?
Well, last time I checked, they had 26,000 on the, and last time I checked, they had collected about 16 Bitcoin worth of fees.
It's like
it's kind of cool they keep the fee address is a static address, so you can see that's how you kind of measure usage. But you have to remember that that could be gamed. You could have like 40 computers all running coin joins from the same person.
It's true.
That's why the more the merrier.
Yeah, more the merrier, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's going on.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you would try and attack it. If you're going to try and attack it, you would, you know, if there's 70 participants in a coin join, you try and be as many of those participants as possible. It gets really impractical the more people use it. So,
yeah. So let's
when get, in doubt, mix.
So let's get these hardware wallets tested out with Wasabi, implemented, and start coin joining people.
Well, the Trezor T already works, and I think that is like,
and the cold card,
the best. The Trezor T is like the best entry level hardware wallet, like that's the one I recommend like wholeheartedly. And then Cold Card's like great for power users.
Yeah.
So those are like two huge ones. That's awesome.
Speaking of awesomeness, LND 0.60, the latest big release of LND was released this week, and it comes with static channel backups, which I called out last week. I knew it was going to include them. You weren't certain.
You know, we got to go back to the tape.
Error on the side of caution. Yeah, the release notes, they're highly encouraging that people upgrade if you are running LND nodes. And this is...
Yeah, we're upgraded.
Yeah, we're upgraded on our nodes. So if you want an open channel...
Noddle made it super easy.
How so?
There was just... He pushed the update, and then there was an update button, and you press the update button, then you wait for it to update. Then you just stopped the LND service. Then you updated that, and then you started it. It was like three button clicks. Super intuitive.
Yeah. Well, shout out to the Noddle team for being on top of that.
It's pretty badass. And they got it out really quick.
And yeah, so we're fully upgraded now. This channel backup, it's an interesting sort of way to back up everything. It basically makes it so that you're able to get messages out to your peers, your channel peers, and politely ask them to close so that your funds get back to the on-chain address.
Right. They force close the channels, and it goes back to the address.
Yeah, and this is incited via message that you send to your channel peers. So what does this mean? Does this give you a sense of...
You know, it's a step in the right direction. You know, you probably won't lose everything if something like catastrophic happens.
Yeah.
It's still not ideal because you don't have your channels up anymore. You know, you have to pay all those transaction fees to close all the channels. So ideally, you'd never have to use it, but it's a nice... It's good to have a fallback.
This is actually a good caveat into a subject that was not on the docket, but I saw you and Nick Bhatia, who's going to be in town next week on the podcast, talking about our NAR on our routing node, which is
node accrual rate? Is that it?
Yeah, the node accrual or
Node accrual rate.
Node accrual rate, and sparked a basically trying to discern the amount of interest earned via routing Lightning Network payments. This is what Nick Bhatia is trying to sort of develop ideas around and a process around. And the concept is you can sort of discern a percentage gained from your node because of routing transactions and fees that you accrue. But you brought up a good point that our node is probably net negative because of the cost of opening and closing channels on chain.
Well, he brought up the cost of the noddle as well. But they sent us that for free, so it would be unfair to include that. But yeah, I mean, we have the on-chain fees. We have the cost of the hardware, whatever you're running it on, right? We have internet you have to pay for. You have to pay for, obviously, electricity, but that's minimal. Yeah, and so it all comes out negative. Now, the other thing I said, you know, it's, first of all, it's very early to make any kind of conclusions. I kind of disagree with Nick in a lot of ways that I don't think that people are going to be honestly reporting what kind of fees they make. So that just throws that whole thing out the window. And then the third thing is there's other benefits that are really hard to quantify in running your own full node, right? Like self-sovereignty and being able to verify your own transactions and increased privacy. So if you're already running your own full node, you're so that you know, you just end up running a Lightning node as well. That's kind of,
yeah, that's a hard seems to, like that seems like a variable cost dependent on the individual.
Yeah, it's hard, and it's hard to put that cost totally on running a Lightning node.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an interesting conversation. Maybe we'll link to that if we can find it. I'm sure we'll be able to.
Well, so I recently discovered how to like adjust. I'm like just learning on the fly. I discovered how to change the fees of the channels from the default, because we were just running on the default for a while. So
you lowered our base fee,
right? So like Lightning Lightning
10
fees,
millisatoshis or something like that.
The way Lightning fees work, so on-chain transaction fees work by the size of the transaction in bytes, like how big a file it is. The Lightning transactions go by how much money you're sending, right? So there's a base, which is just automatic charge, and I think that defaults to one Satoshi. So I lowered that to 0.1 Satoshi. And then
100 millisatoshis.
Yeah. So it makes super small payments, like, ultra cheap.
And it,
like, basically free.
And if you're making big payments, it gives us a little bit more of a VIG.
So then, yeah, I changed the rate on the
Satoshis per byte.
Yeah, the variable rate. Mm-hmm. I raised that, but it, like, not that much. I'm not. It's hard to visualize at those small numbers how low it is. So I'm just experimenting. I'm gonna just keep changing it around. But it's always gonna be low for at least for now.
Trial and error, baptism by fire, baby.
I mean, part of the reason why I think it's going to be hard to make, like, reasonable, like, extra reasonable returns on these things is because there's always just, like, some guy who is just doing it to, you know, like, help the network or whatever, who's just running big channels all over the place with very, very low fees.
Yeah, the altruistic node runner.
Yeah, it's super easy to undercut. Especially with, like, private channels and stuff, then other people won't even see it.
Yeah, the private channel is more what I'm more worried about for developing these statistics and rates and stuff like that.
You could be running Tor nodes, right? Like Tor Lightning nodes.
You'd be running them by default, mostly.
The people running, like if, well, oh yeah, hopefully the majority of nodes will be running Tor by default. But, you know, then people aren't going to be honestly reporting their fees. Why would they do that?
Yeah.
There's no incentive to. Except, well, like, the public, if there's, like, publicly traded routing companies,
so
then they have to.
So
right?
that's what I'm getting at. There'll be, like, a two-tiered or a bifurcated system of, like, an underground Lightning network and an above-ground kosher network.
Well, that's, like, kind of, like, the one of the reasons just jumping head first into like, running this node. Because I feel like you can't, like, if you're not trying to not make that happen, then you can't really complain about it. And I think once you have, like, reliable backups, like, a lot of people will. I think a lot of people will, you know, prefer not to send it through, send their transaction through some major routing node.
We're a major routing node now.
No, I think we're, like, we're just, like, a nice, I don't know. Like, the, it's, like, the anti, it's supposed to be, like, the anti-routing node. Like, it'd be nice if we could, like, yeah, just like have a, I've closed any channels that Ellen Big has opened with me. So I'm disconnected from him.
Your big Ellen Big conspiracy.
Yeah, we have huge channels with like Pierre. I don't know. It's just like the friend, I guess the friendly routing node. Yeah. Like there's the friendly community routing node.
Your local routing node.
Yeah.
Two freaks that you freaks know. At least we hope you know us a little bit by this point. We're here to help.
I just want I want the network to be as distributed as possible, like the least hub and spokey as possible.
Yeah, it seems like it's getting easier to make that envision reality a real reality.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is just like really reliable backups. Like once you can give people that, you know, peace of mind.
Well, LND 0.60 took a big
huge step
in that direction. So
yeah,
if you haven't upgraded yet, upgrade in the GitHub release notes. They say it's highly encouraged because
you can't participate in the static channel backups.
Due to the nature of some of the bug fixes which were made during the implementation of the new SCB feature, users are highly encouraged to upgrade to this new version. Staying on Lightning, though, couple cool apps that we wanted to bring up. Ellen Paywall Link is the first one, and this seems like a pretty simple thing. You could put any link behind a Lightning Network enabled paywall, basically like a Bitly, but for people who want to make satoshis on this.
Yeah, and it pops up a little Lightning invoice, and then the visitor pays the Lightning invoice, they get redirected, you get paid, and the guy who runs this gets paid a bit.
So you could like paywall anything, right?
Yeah, but like once they get through, then they have like the regular link, right? It's still really cool. Yeah. I think it's a really, I like simple tools, just like little things.
It's a very cool, proof of concept. We'll definitely share it in the show notes, paywall.link. And then the second one we want to highlight is Lightning Scratch Card. This one's really cool. So this is not exactly the same idea, but what it is you pay micro payments to scratch off a piece of an article, a bit at a time, and leaving the rest of it sort of redacted.
It's like a communal paywall.
Yeah, it's a communal paywall that you can pay. So like right now I'm looking at an article that has only been 25% revealed and stops like three quarters of the way through the first paragraph. That's all I can read right now, but if I were to pay 100 satoshis, I'd be able to get a few more lines to read.
You're not going
to
contribute and help people read the rest?
No, my node configuration right now is not ideal.
I scratched off like half a paragraph of a different article the other day. It's pretty cool. It's like it's an interesting idea for a paywall.
It's a very interesting idea.
Because then because once one person scratches, then everyone can see that part that is now visible.
Mm-hmm. You could, this is a very cool, like, gamified way of interacting with content.
And it's something that's only possible with, like, a...
With
Lightning
Network.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it could probably be enabled with other technologies in this space, but the fact that we have...
Without having to do, like, KYC and everything.
Yeah.
Like, you could probably, like, integrate it with Stripe. Something
if you wanted to,
that'd be a pain in the ass.
So these things are getting built. It's cool to see them. We are building similar things that we're gonna be working on, like similar content.
Was that a little teaser?
Gamify ideas as well, a little teaser.
And both of these we open channels to, so that's like another reason that the node is really useful, is because if we talk about something, then we can open a channel to it ahead of time.
Let's check the node right now. Channel count, 207. 207 channels open.
I think that's pretty high.
Yeah, it's
I mean, high. It's It's not Pierre's node.
What's he at?
But so look up Pierre's node. Type in power node users. Lightning power users is what the node is.
Oh, Pierre's got 1,220.
Insane.
Holy crap.
Insane.
Pierre.
He's been fighting the good fight.
Shout out to Pierre. What else have you learned managing our node? Anything new from last week?
No, it's been going great. It's the noddle makes it extremely easy.
Staying on Lightning a little bit, not directly involved, but the HODL Knot BTC Pay fundraiser was run over the last week. That was badass. The website was badass.
But it was all run through BTC Pay server.
Run through BTC Pay server, and it was very interactive, so you could tell, like, you could tell in real time when people were donating, and would show whether it was an on-chain transaction or a Lightning Network transaction. And the amount.
Just came down in a ticker. That was so fucking cool.
Yeah, it's crazy how, and again, like gamifying this stuff, like gamifying a fundraiser for a defense fund. It was fun. It was like,
you know, it really, I donated through Jewel, and it like really, it clicked because, you know, like you go there, you click donate, and then it just pops up right through your browser, and just makes the payment instant, and then you see it like pop up on the little ticker that everyone sees. Like, that's pretty fucking cool. And I guess, the little bar moves.
I guess
global
this is,
payments.
This is the themes. This is the theme of tonight's rabbit hole recap: is gamification from Satoshi's treasure to the scratch off to this. Like, is this the way like we get Bitcoin to the masses? Is sort of gamifying all this stuff?
Well, I like games, so I'm fine with that.
Is this for...
I think it'll be effective.
Is this going to be adopted by rich billionaires looking to stash their wealth, or people looking to interact in a gamified world?
I mean, I think it's already been gamified to many degrees. I mean, like, you have the whole trading element. Like, we had, what, OK Casino, right? You know, we have... BitMEX is, like, a straight... That's like a video game. Like, this is how it's all set up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say OK Casino, bring me back to the OK Wood Chipper, which also made me think of the article that Nick Carter dropped this week about proof of solvency and the horrid history of exchanges and proof of solvency.
Yeah, and I think OK Coin specifically faked their proof of solvency, right?
Yes, they did. Yeah. They deleted it. There's like we'll link to the next piece as well, but there's a laughable history of exchanges saying that they would provide proof of reserves and then either never following up and only once and not repeating it, or following up and completely fabricating it like OKCoin did. There's one exchange, CoinFloor out of UK, that has produced 60 months in a row of proof of reserves.
But they're tiny little
exchange. Yeah, they're a tiny little UK exchange. But
they've been around for a while, I think.
60 months is 5 years. They've been around for at least 5 years.
That's a pretty long time in this space.
Providing proof of reserves every month.
That's 2014. That's pretty long.
Yeah. So we have some unknown exchange leading the way on proof of reserves, which is something we probably don't talk about enough on this podcast, is something that is enabled with this technology that should be demanded by the market. Do you think so?
Well, it's never really been possible before Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I think now that it's possible that, yeah, it should be demanded. I mean, at least I'm surprised some services haven't risen to the occasion just to attract business. You know, like, at least a couple of them should be doing full-blown, badass proof of reserves.
Yeah, and CoinFloor, if I went and read their monthly report, like, it's very... very nice put together, very easy to read, and very step-by-step. Here's the hash of what we prove we have. You can go double-check it, cross-reference it using these steps. And so it should be. Like, it should be like a monthly investor report. It should be at the bottom. Like, oh, by the way, here's our proof of reserves to make sure, give you some comfort that we actually have the money that that we're saying you have access and ownership of on our platform.
But then, like, on the other side, like, they have all these, you know, USD and euro liabilities and whatnot that they can't ever give you proof of reserves of that. So you're still, you know, the proof of reserves isn't a bulletproof. I guess, like, especially something like an ETF or something like that, proof of reserves is extra, I would say, is like extra important. Right? Because then they can give you the full 100% what you need to see. There's no fiat holdings on the side that complicate the picture.
Yeah.
Because, like, an exchange could have full, they could have their full Bitcoin, you know, full everything they need for Bitcoin, the right amount of Bitcoin, and have no USD in their bank accounts. If they needed to, if there was like, if they were using proof of reserves, that's what they would have to do.
Well, that's what Nick brought up in his article as well. Like, some of these exchanges too could easily game this by like buying Bitcoin, moving it to a wallet.
Exactly.
Like the day before or something like that.
So, and then it's the opposite effect, because then the exchanges that are hurting and that are below the amount they should be at, they're like insolvent, put themselves in an even more risky position by getting into like highly volatile Bitcoin instead of holding cash positions, right? So that could even have like a knock-on effect. It'd be worse.
Yeah, but this is in the current paradigm we're living, like in a future hypothetical Bitcoinized world. Do you think it makes more sense?
Yeah, I mean, there should be like proof of reserves for everything.
Yeah.
I was thinking, yeah, and like proof of reserves and like multisig, just lots of multisigs with, you know, like when you enter different contracts and stuff, you'll have like a third party, you know, just
executor or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Yeah.
Handling any disputes, and not only will you have proof of reserves, you'll also have proof of no one party can move it.
Yeah, slowly but surely. Be aware, these things are coming.
We're getting there quicker than
that's what, like,
I thought we were going to get
in
there.
In the Ben I wrote yesterday, it's like Bitcoin's quickly becoming more scalable, more efficient, more private, and more robust. Another thing not on the list that came out this week, Blockstream pushed an update for the satellite. It's now extremely more efficient for CPU on the CPU, or less burdensome on CPUs. So
yeah, they're running it on the same chip now as the Noddle.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's just making it more accessible with cheaper hardware. So again, it's a different transaction relay option to users, the satellite, and that's just getting easier to use now. And it seems like everything's getting easier to use quicker. Like the Wasabi Trezor, like, they were not even Trezor, just Wasabi hardware compatibility. I thought that would take a while to implement, but it seems like it's pretty easy to.
He kind of teased it on our show with us when he was on with us.
Yeah. It's crazy to see that exists. Sorry. It feels like just 6 months ago we were talking about testing out Wasabi, and it's already implemented in some of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're just fucking beasts over there. They're just fucking killing it all the time.
Keep killing it.
Yeah, I mean, that Wasabi news is, it's just like such a big deal that I could tell people, you know, like, buy a hardware wallet, use it with Wasabi, you know, have a full node, use it with Wasabi. You should be good for 99% of situations.
Yeah. It's happening faster than I expected. Moving to the macro scene, to the geopolitical scene, seems like the U.S. has sanctioned Cuba, Venezuela, and one other bank, I believe.
Nicaragua. Yeah, there you go.
with the $1,000 remittance cap every 3 months. So.
No. So just Cuba has a remittance cap.
Okay, just Cuba has a remittance
cap. And then they sanctioned the Central Bank of Venezuela. And then they sanctioned a financial services business in Nicaragua. So the remittance cap is...
That's the big one.
That's the big one, especially where Bitcoin's involved.
Yeah.
So that's $3 billion that Americans, at least in 2016, I imagine it's gone up, that Americans send back home to the Cuban relatives every year, $3 billion. And now they're capped at $1,000 a month.
Per person. $1,000
every 3 months.
Yeah. So $1,000 a quarter, $4,000 a year.
Good math.
Finally, some good math, some easy math, thank God. It's pretty fucked up, but again, it proves a hurdle through which Bitcoin can route around.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, this is, it's kind of ridiculous that any given country can tell you that you can't send to, like the European Union and, someone else, but the European Union came out, you know, like they were like, this is ridiculous. It's like a horrible idea. They're not having any sanctions on their side. So Bitcoin can freely move in and out of the country through the other, you know, for arbitrage or whatnot.
Now, and it highlights a very hairy situation that we're finding ourselves in, especially as the geopolitical landscape heats up and sort of tensions rise on the international stage. Once you have these sort of disagreements between like UN countries, NATO countries, when you're sanctioning stuff, just inherent attack vectors for friction and tumult that Bitcoin is sort of just doesn't even have to worry about. It's sort of completely separate and could provide the solution where people are like, all right, this stuff is getting to a point where it's unworkable. It's too political. It's too much of a bureaucracy, that this just presents an easier, less system with less friction.
Yeah, I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, Bitcoin makes these kind of rules unenforceable. And that's why when people say, like, oh, Bitcoin is too expensive, you know, it's too complicated, all these different things, like, that's the cost for being able to send a payment, you know, back home to your family members when you otherwise wouldn't be able to. Like, you're not going to be able to, like, send Ripple payments back to Cuba. You know, like, that's because it's a centralized system. Like, if people do that, like, they will shut it down. So like, that's that, it just highlights the value prop, like, so clearly. And then when you have, like, Venezuela's central bank getting sanctioned, like, that highlights it from a completely different angle. Like, this, you know, the Cuban story is more about the individuals and people, but in Venezuela, like, the corrupt government over there is going to want to move more into Bitcoin because their central bank is sanctioned.
Yeah. And speaking of not even corrupt governments, well, yeah, corrupt governments and sort of countries with the ability to take bigger risks because of their current situations. We have not confirmed this. It's been hard to confirm. There was a news story about meetings in the Middle East. It seems that Afghanistan and Tunisia are talking about exploring.
Have you looked into that at all?
I've looked into it, and like there's one little blurb, and
I think it's not real.
Yeah, it might.
I didn't have a chance.
I bet they said blockchain. So that's, here's the,
it was a horrible source. It was News BTC, which no one should ever go to.
I didn't
website.
Go to News BTC. There was Asia, this was in Asia Today.
Oh, someone tagged us in a News BTC thing on Twitter.
So I went to try to find like the at least the something closer to the source. Asia Today, and Bitcoin was brought up, but so was blockchain and Hyperledger. And
there's no way
something could have been lost in translation, but at least they're talking about.
I don't know. I guess
I don't know. Well, if they this is a risk it for the biscuit. Not full information call out here, because hey, if Afghanistan is thinking about denominating some bonds in Bitcoin, you heard it here first.
That's the that'll be the real, you know, that'll be, first of all, I don't think it's a true story, but yeah.
No, I think the meetings definitely did happen, and the conversation was brought up. It's, what are they trying to make, a gov coin or?
No, they'll probably just do like a blockchain bond or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's just buzzwords.
Buzzwords. All right. Sorry for that buzzword.
I haven't looked into it, so maybe you're right. Maybe it's good.
If I am right, you heard it here first.
I think that'll be a game changer when, you know, Afghanistan starts issuing. That's when the world will start taking notice of Bitcoin.
This is something you want to talk about. There's a couple of apps in Europe. We've been obviously stacking sats on the weekend. Make sure if you're stacking sats, you're doing so in a very OPSEC.
Stack sats responsibly.
Yeah, stack sats responsibly. Don't flaunt big buys on Twitter, especially if you have a real name. But obviously, we've been stacking sats.
And use Wasabi.
Use Wasabi as well. We're U.S. citizens. We can only use certain apps. We've had European freaks join in our stacking sat Saturdays. And we've seen two apps in particular, Get Bitter and Amber. And
we're just, Amber's Australian.
Amber's Australian.
Get Bitter is...
is Europe and...
is Europe, yeah.
France, I believe, or France is...
and England, so, now that's separate, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Have they officially exited yet?
I mean, they're still part of Europe, right?
I don't know.
Even though they're not part of the Europe.
It's all very confusing to me.
No one will ever know.
We'll never know. I heard they have to vote again, though.
Yeah, so Get Bitter is a cool... it seems kind of cool, but I guess basically you give them an address, and then whenever you transfer money to them from your bank account, they just automatically put the deposit of Bitcoin in your address, so they're like non-custodial fiat to Bitcoin gateway.
It's like an Azteca, almost.
I mean, but you're like sending them bank transfers. But if you do an automatic transfer, like you can basically every week just funds get deposited to an address of your choosing. It's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
But so I don't know if it's legit or not. So if any of you have used it, it doesn't allow Americans. So if any of you have used it, let us know if you hate it or if you love it. Yeah. Or if it's just kind of decent.
Yeah, then Amber just seems like a very...
Amber looks badass.
Yeah. It's explain it.
It's like... I think the app is called like Acorn in America.
Yes.
Where they like take your change and invest it for you. Like any purchase you make, if you have like a little spare left over to round up to the dollar, like they take that amount and they buy Bitcoin with it.
Yeah.
So like goes with the involuntary stacking sats.
Like ethos.
Like constant small buys.
Constant tithing. So any of you Australian freaks, if you're using that app, or have used it, let us know. We're trying to expand the apps through which you can stack sats.
So. Because Cash App's only U.S., so.
Only U.S.
Yeah, and we have a global audience.
It's crazy.
So it's nice if we can leverage them, too. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, tweet it at us, maybe.
Yeah, tweet it at us. Keep stacking sats, but also stack responsibly. That's a couple weeks ago, people were getting... a little outlandish out there.
It's going to be okay, Marty.
I hope so.
Bitcoiners always get a little bit outlandish.
It's true.
Comes with the territory.
Yeah. That's all we got on the topics this week. Got a few minutes to riff. What are you thinking?
Well, I have a couple things to riff about this time since I didn't have riff.
Matt brought notes. Matt brought notes.
I guess it's not a riff if I brought notes. So, I got two more reports of people getting their KYC blocked at Binance.
Ooh.
Of not their getting their non-KYC account locked and KYC forced on them. And so far, like, the common denominator is that everyone was using just like a VPN service, like a shared VPN service. So I think they might be like flagging VPN IP addresses.
Yes, if you're trading shit coins on Binance, beware. They're tracking IP addresses.
Yeah, I mean, they're obvious. Well, we always knew they were tracking IP addresses. That just should be
expected.
They're
flagging IP
addresses. But yeah, they're flagging them and forcing KYC. So if you have a non-KYC account with them, and you should be using a VPN when you connect to their service, which is kind of... ridiculous, but that they would flag them in the first place. But if you do, just you got to assume that you're going to have to give them KYC at some point or just forfeit your funds. So just be aware.
Be aware. I haven't had a phone for the last 3 days. It's been pretty therapeutic. Let's riff on this. I've gotten a lot more sleep. Not having a phone like next to your bed.
You haven't had a phone for 3 days?
3 days.
That's pretty crazy. Like, why?
So
you should get a new one.
I am trying to get a new one. I was telling you this before the podcast. You obviously weren't listening.
Yeah, but you told me, but I did. You did not say 3 days. 3 days is crazy.
3 days, yeah. Well, these telecom companies move at a snail's pace. Sprint's website is one of the worst websites I've ever used. And I just doxed my phone carrier.
Now you got to change it. That's good because Sprint's fucking sucks, so you should change it.
But... no, it's been terrible. I'm like...
I mean, you're telling us how Sprint
I'm almost sucks. Ashamed to admit it, but I'm getting off the family plan now.
She's like kind of doxing... I don't know. You're just doxing yourself left and right.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I won't riff on this. Long story short, it's a pain in the ass to get off the family plan, start your own plan, and keep your number.
Yeah, or just stay on the family plan forever. That'd be badass, too.
Yeah, it feels dirty at this point.
You could always just, like, pay them under the table with Bitcoin.
When you're a married man, I think.
Just send your parents Lightning payments for... You can give them a little bit extra, too, to make it worth their while. You just stay on it.
I'm not sure if Lightning's at the point at which my parents are using it yet.
Yeah, so just send them on-chain payments.
That's just true. That either.
So I also thought it was interesting, just to get back to Bitcoin, that Luke Martin interviewed Arthur Hayes recently.
Oh, yes. And he's talking about SPX swaps, right?
Yes, he is. He is talking about, you know, being able to trade basically...
equities.
Yeah, but... Yeah, like derivatives of them or whatever. But he also reiterated their firm stance against KYC. So they don't accept U.S. customers, but there's no... He, like, reiterated, like, how important it was that they don't do KYC. And I just thought, in dichotomy to, like, how CZ and Binance is currently handling KYC procedure, that's pretty interesting.
Well, this is what you said last week towards the end of the episode. Is any exchange, like every exchange, their way to get market shares to come in, be anti-KYC, AML, allow people to just rush on, and eventually they get too big to not KYC, and they wind up doing it. But right. BitMEX is arguably one of the biggest economic drivers in Bitcoin and is still a stalwart in denying that. And Arthur Hayes, like, reiterates that last week as CZ's coming out and be like, yeah, we sort of have to comply now. Like, is Arthur Hayes the most badass CEO in the world right now?
I'm a huge fan. I think he's just, it's like, just even from where they set their principles, like, in the right place to begin with, because they have, the whole business is run through Bitcoin. They have no fiat, you know, entrances or exits. They have no altcoins. They allow you to trade altcoins, but they only accept and withdraw Bitcoin. Everything is just priced and based in Bitcoin. Like, that is, from a security point of view, and from, like, a regulatory arbitrage point of view, it gives you, like, super, you know, movement there.
Big long-time thinkers there. Yeah. Long-term thinkers. And their research page, BitMEX Research, is one of the best blogs in the space from a technical perspective.
Yeah, they just put out, like, how much miners have lost mining Bitcoin SV, Bitcoin Cash SV. I think it was $5 million since inception.
Ooh.
$5.4 million. Yeah. And they're just susceptible to attack at any given time. And so they've just been, that just useless security.
And it seems like they're not going to be traded on many exchanges for much longer either.
Yes, they did get delisted. CZ dropped the hammer on them.
Political, you know, play.
I have a lot of complaints about CZ, but he's also just, he just does what he wants to do. That was pretty, like, why would they, like, Kraken also delisted after that. And they were like, people were giving Jesse Powell shit about it. And he was like, they're suing us. They're like, they're fucking suing them over the handling of the Checkpoint, Bitcoin Cash's Checkpoint, which also, you know, but they're suing them over that. And he's like, you expect me to list your coin while you're fucking suing me?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't bite the hand that feeds.
Yeah. So then Bitcoin Cash
exchanges SV. Feed you liquidity.
But we've said for a while that all these guys were like, it's all trending to zero. This just.
Just look at the people who are involved, freaks. They are just, like, just from a pure character analysis, they are terrible people. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's a questionable argument, but.
Is it, though?
Yeah, because you. But I still. The fork is a minority fork. It's worthless. It's centralized. It provides no value whatsoever. And it's also, you know, controlled by some very horrible people.
Yes, this is true. All right, we're 4 minutes above our 1 hour time. Thanks for joining us this week, freaks. Matt, any last words?
Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love.